Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. On Thursday, September the 10th, thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. First today, it's emerged passengers impacted by this week's air traffic control outage have been warned they're unlikely to be entitled to compensation. An investigation into what caused the issue is continuing. More than 330,000 people are thought to have been affected. Among them, Rebecca Mitchell from Tunbridge, who was due to leave Gatwick on Tuesday for a nine-day trip to Tenerife with her family. Her flight was on the runway when the technical issue hit.
So we'd booked a Jet2 holiday to Tenerife, a package holiday, and obviously we're due to fly out at, I think it's 10 past one yesterday was our flight time, and obviously everything was running quite smoothly. We got on the plane, we were queuing up for takeoff, so I think we was on the runway obviously in the queue for takeoff. And that's when, obviously, everything, the captain come over and said, oh, there's a bit of a delay. And we was like, oh, OK, you know, is what it is, sort of thing, just all sat there. And then about 45 minutes later, engine started up again. And we was like, oh, OK, yeah, not too bad. And then they said, oh, you know, we're just going to queue back up again and wait for our slot and things like that. And then all of a sudden the engines went off again. And the captain come over the tunnel again and said, oh, as you probably noticed, the engines have gone off again. Unfortunately, it was, the issue was air traffic control and it's gone down yet again. We've just got to wait and see what happens now. Hopefully it'll be back up and running. And obviously the hours started ticking by. And it got to, I think, about 3 hours in. And everyone was obviously getting a little bit, you know, what's going on. And the only thing they offered in the meantime was cups of water for people, so we had no refreshments or anything like that. And obviously we had a one-year-old baby with us, my grandson, so obviously it was all getting a little bit, you know, heady for everyone. And then you know, it just went on from there really. And then the hours again then carried on ticking by, and we just kept getting updates from the captain saying, oh, sorry, you know, we just don't know what's happening. And then I think it was about 4 hours in, we all started getting emails to say that our holiday were cancelled. So everyone was like, what? All reading our emails, everyone on the plane that had the package holidays, and because obviously some just had direct flights through Jet2 and some had package holidays with them. So obviously everyone that had the package holiday was obviously shocked, you know, that's our holiday gone, what's going on? And then the captain said on the tannoy, you've had emails, it's false information. Your holidays haven't been cancelled, it's just your flight that's been cancelled, and we will endeavour to get you on the next available flight the minute we can get aviation back up and running again. So we were then hopeful again that we would just get put on a new flight eventually and not miss our holiday. And then it got to 6 hours on the tarmac pretty much, and then they said that they was going to offload us all, but in the meantime they was going to give us some refreshments free of charge. So finally they came around and gave us things like coffee or a can of Coke and you know, a biscuit or something like that, a chocolate bar or something. But that was all we was offered really in that whole 6 hours. And then we was offloaded slowly, you know, a few tens of people, you know, each at a time onto, you know, buses to get back to the airport. We was then put through border control and then ushered into baggage reclaim. Which was chaos in my eyes, absolute chaotic up there. We waited probably about 2 hours to find our bags and our pram. So we were still carrying our one-year-old grandchild around with my daughter. It was horrendous, really. For about 2 hours, we was trying to find all of that baggage. It was chaotic. There was hardly any reps in there. No one was telling us what was going on. Thousands of people in baggage reclaim. Bags everywhere. And then when we finally got our bags, we went back into departure lounge, where we was then told by the Jet2 counter that unfortunately, yes, your holiday has been cancelled and you'll get a refund in 7 days.
Some people have also been left stranded abroad. Philip Davis is a golf instructor from Tunbridge who was due to fly home from Spain on Tuesday. He was still struggling to get a flight last night.
I've lost business, yeah. Thankfully today wasn't a really, really busy day, but I mean, any day without work is obviously not great. I've had to cancel a few lessons. Tomorrow I am quite busy, so if I don't make it in time for tomorrow, then that's 2 days I've lost money. So it's a bit unfortunate, but honestly, it's really just been frantic. It's really interesting to see how crazy things can get, like just from, you know, airport shutting down. It's the amount of all of the hotels were filled up.
Rebecca and Philip were speaking to our colleagues at KMTV. You can watch their video report by heading to the KMTV pages of Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories for you today. In a house near Maidstone has been badly damaged following a crash involving a lorry and two cars. The building next to the Bull Inn on the A229 at Linton Hill was hit yesterday afternoon. Two people were taken to hospital. Can see pictures on the website today. We're being reminded not to throw away batteries or rechargeable items after a bin lorry caught alight in Maidstone. Crews managed to put out the blaze on Woodlands Close yesterday morning. It was caused by a portable speaker. Now, next on today's episode, this is one of our most read stories on the website. A young Kent woman with a debilitating stomach condition says she fears she could die before Christmas. Ella Rake was diagnosed with gastroparesis, which means she struggles to absorb food and medication. The 22-year-old from Herne Bay now weighs between just 6 and 7 stone, as the illness causes her to vomit up to 100 times a day. She's a regular visitor to the A&E department at the QEQM hospital, but is looking for longer-term solutions. Our reporter Max Chesson has been speaking to Ella about her challenges.
What is happening with the dietitian? Do you feel like you're not being taken seriously? Is that right?
Yeah, the dietitians tend to really just focus on my weight, which is very difficult because obviously a part of my illness is severe constipation and fluid retention. So I do gain weight, lose weight all over the place, but they don't tend to look at the bigger picture of how my potassium is affecting my heart. A lot of the time when I go into hospital, the doctors will want me admitted and they'll do everything they can, and they have been very good, but the dietitians will refuse to see me, saying, oh, they've seen me before. They've tried to pin it on bulimia, things like that, tried to make me eat just to prove that I would be sick.
How scared does it make you feel that the people who need help you aren't?
It's terrifying because on a daily basis, I'm sort of treading on eggshells of how I'm going to be the following day. I can wake up some days and I'm okay, but then I wake up some days and I'm so, so bad with my levels. I can't stand to brush my teeth some days, and I can't shower anymore standing up. I have to sit down because I pass out. I'm terrified that I will die of a cardiac arrest. Every time, without fail, when I go into hospital, the nurse will go and get the doctor because she's so concerned about the ECG. I lost my dad to a cardiac arrest a couple of years ago, so it's a really huge fear to me.
So you said to me before that you felt like they were sort of waiting for you to get worse, they're waiting for your kidneys to fail. Yeah. Where has that sort of come from in your mind?
They kind of said that they wouldn't intervene unless my kidneys literally packed up completely. And that's also a big worry for me because I've had so many kidney problems. And it's resulted in sepsis in the past, so it's really scary.
Kent Online reports.
Residents on a street in Whitstable say someone could end up seriously hurt or even killed due to speeding. The group of concerned neighbours on Downs Avenue say 5 cats have been killed. There are calls for a 20 mph speed limit to be expanded across all residential areas in the town. Thousands of Year 6 pupils will be sitting the Kent test today. The exam will determine who's eligible to apply for a grammar school place for next year. Medway's version of the test takes place next week. The Gravesham MP has asked Andy Burnham to back her campaign for the Gravesend to Tilbury ferry service to be restored. The ferry linking Kent and Essex hasn't run since 2024 after funding was pulled. Well, Dr. Lauren Sullivan raised the issue during yesterday's Prime Minister's questions.
The Prime Minister will remember his first visit as Labour leader to Gravesend, proving he loves the South as much as the North. Now, Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, on that day I spoke to him about mine and my honourable friend, the member for Thurrock's, long campaign to get the return and the sustainable funding of the Gravesend Tilbury ferry. Mm-hmm. Will the Prime Minister give his support again and help us unlock barriers to back this ferry route, as connectivity to supporting high streets matter?
Well, I'm glad to correct something of a myth at this dispatch box, Mr. Speaker. Like you, I do love the south of England, so thank you for my honourable friend giving me that opportunity. OK, I love the south of England. I, on this issue, I won't speak for you, Mr. Speaker. On the day I became leader, I visited and I saw where the ferry link used to go across the head of the river. And, of course, critical connectivity for her constituents. I do not think it's acceptable that a link that used to be there just gets abandoned and it goes. I will work with her to find ways of bringing that service back. Supported by Number 10 North. She's got my word on that.
More than 120 people have objected to plans for 67 homes on an equestrian site in Mepham. The stable block at Woodlands Farm in Culverston would be demolished, raising fears over traffic, pressure on services and the loss of green space. But the developers insist it'll play a vital role in helping meet Gravesham's housing shortfall. Several beef-eater restaurants in Kent will be opening for the final time today. Parent company Whitbread are carrying out a restructure, which has led to multiple closures. Sites in Ashford, Dartford and Dover are among those affected.
Kent Online reports.
Now, for the first time in almost 1,000 years, the Bayeux Tapestry has gone on show in England. The embroidery famously tells the story of events leading up to the Battle of Hastings and the Norman Conquest in 1066. But it's also thought to have significant links to Kent. Dr. Charlie Rosier is a lecturer in medieval history at the University of Kent, and he's been speaking to Lucy.
We think that the Bayeux Tapestry may have been made in Canterbury, which is very exciting, very important. We don't know anything for certain, but the main people mentioned in the Bayeux Tapestry by name all have links to Kent and Canterbury. We think the artist responsible for designing it was based at the Abbey of St. Augustine's, which is now in Canterbury. And we think the women who made it were probably embroideresses from the city of Canterbury, probably nuns, highly skilled, years of training. And so that's one aspect of it. It was probably made in Canterbury. The other one is that the people responsible for asking it to be made and commissioning it also have links to Kent. So the abbot of St. Augustine's Abbey in Canterbury at the time was called Scolandus. He's from France and Normandy. And he is probably responsible for designing it and coordinating the whole kind of artistry. So if you want to say there's an author, it's probably him. And then the person who else is involved is Odo, who's Bishop of Bayeux and Earl of Kent. He's a half-brother of King William the Conqueror, and he features prominently in the Bayeux Tapestry several times. And the only other named individuals who are on the Norman side can also be linked back to Odo because they own land from him. So those two things, the kind of people responsible for making it and the place of where it was made, are probably all linked back to Kent and Canterbury in particular.
Incredible. And so if it was made here in Kent, I mean, how did it come to be over in France?
Oh, that's such a good question. And again, that's one of the big unknown questions. If it was commissioned by Bishop Odo of Bayeux, there's then an increased likelihood that it gets taken back over to Normandy because it's effectively owned by him. And the next place that we know where it was is the Cathedral of Bayeux in the late 15th century. So there's a high chance that it could have been taken by Odo or one of his circle back to Normandy, back to Bayeux, and essentially it's been there ever since, except for the few times that it's been moved for kind of propaganda purposes. And this great time that it comes back to be viewed in England starting today on Thursday.
Yeah, it is very exciting to be able to go and see the Bayeux Tapestry at the British Museum. I mean, it's quite significant that it's here, isn't it?
Yeah, well, as far as we know, it's never been to England since it was first taken out of England, effectively, at some early stage in its lifetime. I've been to see it in Bayeux several times, obviously, because I'm fantastically interested in the history in it. But people have only ever been able to see it on public display by going to Bayeux. So it's hugely significant that it's in the British Museum. The reason for that is really, obviously, there's the diplomatic angle and it's good for Franco-British relations. But also the museum is being renovated in Bayeux where it's currently held. So it will be even better to go back to Bayeux after it's been on display here in England and then go and see it again. So I'm going to try and see it as many times as possible. It's just what I've done so far.
Yeah, amazing. And going back to those links to Canterbury and where it was made, I mean, do you think it's a bit of an overlooked part of the history of the Bayeux Tapestry? And you know, particularly those women who made it, who would never have been credited.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And that's one of the kind of great unknowns about this is that there are so many people involved that will never, their names will never be known, and we will never know much about them. But we do know that there's a very famous tradition of embroidery style in England around the time of the Norman Conquest and just before. The Latin term for it is opus Anglicanum, which means English work. And one of the main chroniclers of the whole Norman Conquest, who's a Norman called William of Poitiers, he talks about how famous English embroideresses were across Northern Europe for the great quality of their work. And if you've ever seen the tapestry, you can testify that. That's absolutely true. So, yeah, who those Kentish women were, we'll never know, but they probably were there doing their work and making something which, I mean, I think it's one of the most amazing artifacts I've ever seen from the Middle Ages. And I'd like to think I've seen a lot of them. It's part of my job.
And I suppose they would never have thought people would still be looking at it all these years later.
No, exactly. Maybe they hoped that that might be the case, but I don't reckon any of them dared to imagine it. And its survival has been kind of miraculous. It's been kind of taken out of its storage place. In the French Revolution, it was used to cover a military wagon just for military purposes, short term. It was taken over by the Germans in the Second World War to be used as a propaganda angle. So it's had such an amazing history. And where it is now, back in England, in the British Museum, is another kind of incredible part of its story. So everyone's really excited about that. Yeah. People who've studied the tapestry have looked at kind of how it was made and like what kinds of people were involved in it. And obviously, it's a hugely skilled production. And one of the most interesting things I've ever seen about it was a talk given by a historian who was looking at the back of the Bayeux Tapestry and noticing that it's probably made by groups of women sitting opposite each other, and they each work on half of it at one time. And the quality of the execution suggests that kind of one experienced person was sitting opposite one more inexperienced person, and they were helping each other to make it as they were going along. And I just think that's so amazing to think about. But you know, we can't ever exactly recreate exactly who they were. We can only dream, I guess.
The first batch of tickets to see the tapestry have already sold out. More will be made available in October. There have been calls for Canterbury residents to get priority booking.
Kent Online News.
An incredible story next. It's been revealed how AI has helped to identify a Second World War bomb discovered 10 years ago by a metal detectorist in Kent. Stanley Green placed the object on a shelf in the conservatory of his home in Kemsley, and it sat there for the past decade. Well, earlier this week, he uploaded a picture of it to Google Lens and received a critical warning to call emergency services. Stanley's neighbour, Yasha, has been telling us how she found out about the discovery.
I was just going about my day, as I do. I had some packages that I needed to send off at the post office. So I took a bit of a walk down, and then I did an extended walk. So I came back. So when I left, I had seen that the police were outside, and I came back and they were still here. And so I was wondering what was going on, because that's quite an extensive period of time. So I thought something serious might have been going on. Went back into the house, and so my windows are just peering over. So I kind of stuck my head out, and I saw Sammy, and I was asking him what was going on, and he kind of gave me a bit of a breakdown about his discovery and what he had planned to do with it, what might have happened to us, but now that everything was being sorted out and that they were going to come and collect us. Bomb. I don't know, like saying it out loud is like such a weird word to say. Anyway, so then the bomb disposal team came. They came, they were in the house for a few minutes, maybe 10 to 15 minutes. They collected that. And then we were all hoping we were going to get to witness the, what is it like, the explosion, but a safe explosion of this bomb down in the park. But unfortunately, I think they don't want the audience, unfortunately, so we all had to stay behind. And I think that they did it at another location in the end, yeah, it was just quite a bizarre experience. It's not what you expect on just a Monday afternoon sitting at home. Yeah, crazy. But yeah, getting to know Stan. So I've been a resident here for about just over a year, and I'm starting to get to know my neighbours a little bit. And I think this is a bit of a, not typically, but kind of a day in the life of Stan. So it was all quite entertaining, quite fun, and we're all feeling quite relaxed about it, so that's okay.
You can see pictures of the explosive within the story at Kent Online. It's been confirmed charges won't be introduced at free rural car parks in Dover District. Parking on roads in Ash, Eastree, Wingham and St Margaret's was set to cost drivers £1.80 an hour, but after fierce opposition from villagers, plans have now been scrapped. And organisers say this year's Hop Festival in Faversham provided a £3 million boost to the local economy. Tens of thousands of people attended the two-day event last weekend. It's been described as a celebration of beer, food and music.
Kent Online Sports.
Cricket, and England were taking a 23-run lead into day two of the third test against Pakistan at Edgbaston today. The host dismissed their opponents for just 133 before closing on 156 for four in their first innings. Former Kent player Jordan Cox, who was born in Margate, only managed four runs before being trapped LBW. Meantime, Kent were in need of some quick wickets on day three of their county championship match against Derbyshire. Kent were bowled out for 219 in their first innings in Derby. The hosts were due to resume today on 100 for one in their second go with the bat. That was a lead of 181. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the site, you can also subscribe to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. Don't forget, if you are on Kent Online today, you can check out the very latest Eat My Words food review.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online podcast.